Gotham Sports Network presents NYG Weekly.
NYG Weekly, Ethan Weiss and Nick here with you. Sunday night after maybe one of the most embarrassing Giants losses in recent memory. Before we get into it, you know what we got to do? We got to take care of the housekeeping first things first. Follow us on Twitter. Follow me at EthanGSN. Follow Weiss at NYG Daily. Follow Nick at Nick Zeraris. Follow the blog at GothamSN. Subscribe. We're everywhere. iTunes, Audioboom, Google Play, Stitcher Radio, Spotify. Subscribe, unsubscribe, resubscribe, rate us 5 stars. Leave us a kind review. Gentlemen, the 2-9 New York Giants, who currently sit in the second overall draft position behind the lowly Jacksonville Jaguars, the most apathetic, loser, whatever adjective you choose, just a pitiful display. Utterly embarrassing, half-empty stadium, zero effort, players questioning effort, players questioning the coaching staff, players questioning personnel decisions. A lot to talk about. Before we do get into it, how are we doing?
Brian Daboll wanted to light a spark. With going to Tommy DeVito. He lit a spark. I just think that spark caused a big dumpster fire in the Giants.
He lit a spark while he was coated in gasoline.
There was a big drought in the Northeast, and there was a no burn notice. And Brian Daboll, ignored it.
Yeah,
there were multiple wildfires.
This was very embarrassing. This was, you know, one of those, you know, lowest moments that we've constantly been seeing over the course of the last couple of years, regardless of the head coach, regardless of general manager. But this was very bad. Just to stick to this game, we'll talk on the game. We'll talk what happened after the game in the locker room. But I lost my train of thought, man. I've been so depressed all day, and every time I look up, they're talking about a former Giant that had a great game. Go ahead, man. Go ahead.
Okay.
I lost my train of thought. I'm sorry.
Brian Daboll? You're going in the note. You're going in Weiss's note. Brian Daboll?
I had like a way that I was trying to explain, and I talked about it with myself before started this.
I don't even think we need to cut this. It's just like mentally where we are. It's 11:45. I spent 4 hours in the car today. I sat out in the cold. I'm the idiot that went to the game. It's bad. It's bad. It's really bad. I mean, Weiss, I'll try to pick up your train of thought wherever it crashed, and it may have crashed in the wildfire itself. Brian Daboll thought that, again, I can't even speak it because it's so ridiculous. Brian Daboll thought that going from Daniel Jones, who could not run this offense, could not lead them down the field and could not score points, he thought that going from that to Tommy DeVito would have been some sort of spark and rallying cry that the team could get behind, and all of a sudden they would score points and maybe play some defense. And that couldn't be further from the truth. And I don't know why he did that. I don't know why it wasn't Drew Lock. I think maybe we'll find out, because I don't think Tommy DeVito lasts the rest of the season. But no spark was lit.
There was a spark lit. It just wasn't.
Well, maybe amongst the players after the game, yeah. But I meant on the field.
Well, the thing is Ethan, like when they benched Daniel Jones and then they went to Tommy DeVito, like here's the thing. When you, regardless what you think about Daniel Jones as a player, you know, obviously it impacted the locker room, right? And as a head coach, your job is when you make a decision like that, like again, regardless what you like, They had every right to bench Daniel Jones. Let's not act like this was like a
correct.
They did it wrong. But what Brian Daboll, either he didn't articulate this to his players, his leaders, his locker room, is that this was a performance-based thing. And it wasn't necessarily, you know, because of the injury guarantee. Now, the reason why I think the players, you know, the leaders came to that conclusion was because of how bad the quarterback situation was behind Daniel Jones, where they're like, we're not dumb. Like this guy, we might be 2-8. We might be the 32nd ranked scoring offense, but this guy is the best quarterback on the roster. And because you're not playing him, that sets a dangerous precedent that you're not trying to win games. And we saw it with the effort out there on the field. And not only that, we saw it throughout the week in the locker room. Again, this is not a defense of Daniel Jones. I'm just telling you, when we talk about losing locker rooms, losing players, and lack of effort, like, that's where it started for Brian Daboll. And that's where ultimately this downfall is going to come. And the crazy thing about this is, we're not at Thanksgiving yet. We have six more games. We have a Thursday game in prime time, right? Like, you talk about Tommy DeVito not lying. Like, how many more games is Brian Daboll going to be the coach of this team? Like, that's a legitimate question right now. As crazy as it sounds, that is a legitimate question. All because of, again, how they handled some of these big decisions that they made, both during the season and before the season, ultimately coming up to what we saw last week.
Yeah, I mean, I think you hit the nail on the head. It starts in the offseason. It starts with the plan at quarterback. How many times do we have to fucking say it? There was a multi-part TV series about them trying to move on from this guy because they didn't think he was good enough. They didn't think he was the future. And then so you go ahead and you bench him. And yes, obviously it's performance-based and you have the injury guarantee looming behind it. Okay, that's fine. But when you have a guy who you spent all offseason trying to move on from, and then you're telling me that the next best option on the roster is going to be Tommy DeVito, and it's not even going to be the guy that you lit $5 million on fire for.
Exactly. You want to talk about spark. They sparked that spark, lit $5 million
on fire. Yeah. So yeah, exactly. I mean, I don't understand what effort people are expecting from the players. I mean, as a fan, I'm quite frankly, I'm insulted because I fucking spent 4 hours in the car and sat in the freezing cold and watched a pathetic effort. So
it was like 50 degrees outside. You'll be all right.
No, but it was a feel like in the 30s. But regardless, you're sitting out there. I'm not that husky, you know. I'm chilly. So whatever. Fuck them.
That's effectively what the Giants told you to do. They told you to go fuck yourself today. They weren't tackling.
And I
mean, every time I looked over at the TV, Baker Mayfield was scrambling for 10 yards at a time. I mean, they made Baker Mayfield look like a mobile quarterback. The only game I can think of in my mind that had this same kind of feeling was 3 years ago. It was the Rams game in the Judge season.
I literally was thinking about that today, too. Yes.
The Rams.
The 51-17 game.
The Rams could have hung 70 or 80 points on the board in that game, but they stopped trying. They had 40 points in the first half, and they more or less.
Do you remember that? Off do you remember that screenplay on third and 30 that went for a touchdown where I think it was Janoris Jenkins or Eli Apple that just
completely it was Janoris Jenkins. He just didn't go for the tackle. He had a chance. Yeah. That's the only game I could think of where it was so obvious that guys were not trying to make tackles. They didn't care. And look, like you said, Weiss, they feel that Jones isn't good, obviously, but he was the best quarterback on the roster in their mind. And if you're
that's not a compliment to Jones. That's
an indictment of the coaching staff and the front office for putting this little effort into the quarterback room. I mean, we've been saying that would ultimately decide what happens here, that if they stay in these games and they're competitive, Daboll at least has a leg to stand on, even if they don't have the wins and losses. Yeah. If they play like this one or two more times, it's over. Yeah, you cannot justify it, because at that point you have a full on mutiny. Guys will just
stop. I think it's already over.
Brian Daboll lost the locker room.
It's done. Oh, yeah. It's done. And Weiss, I think you made a really good point earlier, and I don't want to gloss over it. I think you should maybe expand on it a little bit, but talking about, it's not just how he lost the locker room, but there was and probably still is a very large disconnect between the leaders of the locker room and the head coach, which is not good. And one thing I'll just add on to that point, and it's something I tweeted earlier, probably my biggest issue right now is that how many win now pieces this roster seemingly has that are getting frustrated or fed up because this team is not even close to being a win now team. I mean, if you look at the defense, which is just getting fucking gashed on the ground, and the Giants, who had to go with Shane Bowen as their fourth pick because no one wanted this job, because pretty much every defensive coordinator with a brain knew that if things went from bad to worse, which is currently happening, and with Daniel Jones as the quarterback, I mean, he's getting fired. Like, no question. No one wanted to take the risk with this job. It's why it took them weeks. Okay, it wasn't just the Wink Martindale stuff. It took them weeks to find someone who actually wanted the job, and it's showing on the field. But you have a defense. Highly paid Dexter Lawrence, trade capital and highly paid Brian Burns. You've got a fifth overall pick in Kayvon Thibodeau, who's fucking useless. You paid big money to Bobby O. You spent another first round pick on a quarterback. All this high draft capital, both in drafting, in trades, all the money that you're spending on these guys who don't want to compete and realize that they're wasting years of their prime because this team doesn't have a quarterback. And not only do they not have a quarterback, they don't have one that's even fun that you could rally around. Like, there's no Jameis Winston. Like, there's not even a vibes guy. This is simply
Josh Dobbs. There's not even a Josh Dobbs, Winston.
Dude, it's like you're going out there full on knowing that you have no shot to win. It is demoralizing. And the fact that this is what it's come to, it's an indictment on the GM. It's an indictment on the head coach. There's no communication. And all the comments from these players after the game, like, they cannot do this for another 6 weeks. Like, Brian Daboll, it's done. Brian Daboll's done. Like, whether they do it now or they do it in a few weeks, he's done. I'm sorry, Weiss. I know you want to
come back from this. Like, you can. I
agree. The narrative and talk about the game. But, like, this is what the game was. The game is... Today's game is entirely a narrative. Is Joe Shane going to be back? John Mara probably hates the guy. Brian Daboll's lost the locker room. Is he going to be back? I'm sorry. There's 6 weeks left in the season. I'd rather be talking about the product on the field, but that's even worse, arguably. So, like, if you're asking me right now, rip the Band-Aid off. Make Mike Kafka head coach for the last 6 weeks and just see what happens. Because the guy's obviously not coming back. Because in a season like this, where the players hate the head coach, it's going to be, one, not only tough for you to bring the head coach back, it's going to be tough for the GM to justify keeping the status quo when he himself is on the hot seat. So if you're not making the move now, Joe Shane's going to use him as the sacrificial lamb anyway. Like, we all know how this goes. And you took the play calling away from Mike Kafka, and the offense is worse than ever. What are we doing here?
Yeah, I mean, you're not wrong. I mean, I don't know how anyone can justify bringing these guys back at this point, even the stark defenders of them, right? Yeah, you know, losing the locker room. And
we loved these guys. We were big fans. They've lost me.
There's 6 weeks left, guys. Like, that's a long time in the NFL. In week 14, it was week 13 that, you know, Ben McAdoo benched Eli Manning for Geno Smith. And then the week later, they were fired. And then, you know, I think what's his name? Former defensive coordinator of the Giants. Steve Spagnuolo was the interim coach. There's 6 weeks left, and I wonder what will happen if a repeat performance takes place on Thanksgiving. You can't do it on a short week. I know what you're
saying. I mean, do you want me to introduce the nightmare scenario?
There is no, this is a nightmare.
I'm talking about the expeditious nightmare scenario. Like, without a doubt, everyone is getting fired, and it probably won't even wait till the end of the season. Daniel Jones signs with the Raiders and wins a few games.
That'd be great because it's for the draft position. It'd be great.
Correct. But narrative. They just watch Saquon go for 300 yards in prime time after getting their fucking ass beat at home.
That's another layer here, man. Like, see, I was
all again, none of these. And the worst part about that is that none of these were the wrong moves. Like,
but here's the thing.
John Mara, they rightfully deserve some consequence for this. For the state of the team, 100%.
Can I tell you where
the ironic part is going to be? John Mara punishing them for the right moves that they made.
But can I tell you where their punishment comes with the Saquon thing and the Xavier McKinney thing? The Leonard Williams thing. It's not just that they're playing better. It's that they were well-respected in the locker room. And I'll add Tyrod Taylor to that too.
Sure.
Like, these were well-respected guys. Like, I know, like, listen, Saquon will not be doing what he's doing in Philadelphia with New York. We know that. You know, McKinney had his issues, right? Leonard Williams, that awesome trade offer that they got, they had to do it. You know, Tyrod, you know, a lot of that was self-inflicting, but they got rid of so many well-respected guys in the locker room, and they just blindly thought that leaders would emerge, and that didn't happen. And that
I don't know. I feel like that only goes so far.
But that's important.
Of course it's important, but you can't tell me that, like, Xavier McKinney here during this mess is going to, like, keep the defense together or make them play hard, or like Tyrod Taylor helps on the field, but like
listen, here's the thing about Tyrod. I'll explain the Tyrod situation. Had they mend the fences with Tyrod, right, and Tyrod comes back, you guys remember a month ago, and this stuck in my mind today when I was watching DeVito, and I sort of was watching how, like, the team, that they never thought they were going to win this game. There was no rally cry around Tommy DeVito. A couple months ago, I think it was Jordan Ron on ESPN, where he put out a tweet. It wasn't even like an article thing. He put out a tweet. I remember I read it. I was like, damn, that's pretty interesting. He said that he spoke to players in the locker room. I think this was after the Philadelphia Eagle game. And players in the locker room told him that, you know, they'd probably be more, you know, pushing for a quarterback change had it be Tyrod instead of Drew Lock. And that stuck with me today when I saw that, but actually throughout the week when I saw the reaction. And that's my sort of point here, right? Is like, remember, it's not about wins and losses. I think this owner really wants to give these guys another chance. He really wants to do that.
But they've
made it so impossible. But had they mend the fences with Tyrod Taylor, who's a well-respected veteran quarterback in this league, and he had taken the reins at some point this season, right? The players' reaction would have been different. I think the effort would have been there. Would they have won games? Maybe a game or two more than what's expected with DeVito. But it would have been a functional offense. It would have saved their jobs. It would have given them an opportunity. But the fact that they had to wait 10 weeks to bench a guy that we knew was cooked by week four, and then the fact that they couldn't bench him because of how bad they thought it was going to get, and then when they ultimately bench him, it got that bad, just shows how much they dug themselves into this hole that's essentially going to cost them their job if this thing moves forward. And I want to emphasize, there's six more games left. This was after one game. You saw the locker room. Like, six more games, you still got to play Baltimore. You still got to play Philadelphia again. Or you got the Cowboys on Thanksgiving. Like, you still got marquee games coming up against opponents that are could be contending, playing for something. And if this is the effort, and this is the post-game commentary, like, eventually I think they're going to play Drew Lock. They have to.
I agree. I think they have to.
Yeah, I think
I said it at halftime today. I mean, DeVito was uncompetitive out there.
I think they'll give DeVito obviously one Thanksgiving more game. Yeah. And then if it's a repeat performance, right? I mean, they have to, right? Like,
they have to.
Even if they survive,
not
if
even
they survive
if it gives them a chance to win, just for the guys on the team.
We might see him at halftime Thanksgiving.
There's you think so? You think
if they're down 14 or more? 100%.
I'll just say this, to justify for the guys on the team. That's the biggest thing. It's not even about winning the game. It's about
keeping everyone together.
Yeah.
Well, that's the other element here is that they bypassed Tommy DeVito, who was on the second string. That also probably didn't sit well with the team, right? Like, this is the veteran guy that was the quarterback two all year, and now we're playing DeVito like six more games. Can I ask you guys about the defense? Because a lot of people look to the quarterback thing and say, well, this, you know, it was always Daniel's last chance. And like, this defense.
Three weeks without a sack now.
Yeah. And this secondary, I think they had one interception all year, and that was week one.
Yeah, week one, it was Musau.
Like, this is all, like, this is Joe Shane's built defense. Like,
yes.
You can
spend a lot on it.
Yeah. Both in draft capital and money and all that. Put the quarterback thing aside for a second, right? Just looking at the defense alone, that is enough to, like, that's enough to ask the question, why does he deserve another year?
100% agree.
You don't even need to talk about the quarterback or the players that left the building. Tell me the good, like, outside of Dexter Lawrence, is there a great player on this Giants defense?
No.
Right? No. Functional, yeah. McFadden and Bobby O are fine. They're useful players. Drew Phillips is...
Bobby O is a good player. Brian Burns is a good player.
They're functional. They're functional, useful NFL players. They're quality, complementary pieces on a good defense. The Giants have, out of their starting 11, they have about four NFL quality players. They have two projects in Phillips and Banks who definitely need some work. They don't have a pass rusher who can get heat by themselves. Other than Dex, and when Dex is off the field, they give up 8 yards a carry. When Dex is on the field and offenses run away from him, they get 5.5 yards a carry. You can't live like this in the NFL. If you give up 5 yards, 6 yards a carry, you are going to get obliterated. And they were uncompetitive on the field defensively. And it starts with the run. I know Mayfield threw to like 11 different receivers. I know four different receivers had a touchdown. This was, you cannot live in the NFL if you can't stop the run, because you get physically beat down and guys stop caring. They stop getting after the quarterback. They overrun the angles and don't take good angles. There was a screen pass to Bucky Irving in this game where he made like six guys miss, and they had him dead to rights in the backfield. They had him dead to rights.
Where they were backed up in their own end zone.
It was a third long.
Yeah, he cut inside and went up the middle of the field. Yeah. And that's the one that Baker was also running with them and got the. Yep. I mean, the Baker Mayfield doing the Tommy DeVito celebration. That pissed me off. It didn't piss me off because I thought it was disrespectful.
No, it just pissed you off because that's where laughing stock. Like, yeah. That's what it's called.
Did you guys see OC Mignura's tweet about that?
Yeah.
I didn't know.
What did he say, Wes? OC Mignura after that said, there must be repercussions for that celebration.
It was loser. Possibly. It was a loser tweet.
No. I think you're misinterpreting what he meant. He's saying that.
I think he's saying that the defense needs to like hit Baker.
I think that means that they need to get after him. I don't think it was like they need to hit him at it and injure him. I thought they meant
like, no. Yeah, it's like okay.
They need to touch him up. But yeah, but that's my thing. The Giant. No, I don't necessarily think that's loser behavior. I think they're like that has to motivate you to be like this.
You don't
guy
give a shit about Tommy DeVito. Come on, yeah. Now.
Like, but that's the problem. That's the problem.
Again, it's like protect your quarterback. No, don't get disrespected. But like you're a pathetic team. There's nothing to like. There's no honor.
That's the point. That's the point. That's what OC's trying to say is like where is the OC? Where is like the Justin Tuck and the OC Mignura and the Kawika Mitchell and the Michael Bolton and the Deion Grant and the Antro. Like, do you remember like those guys would have never allowed it to get to this point? And the Giants don't have that.
No, they don't have any leaders, but we were discussing that. They don't have any leaders. There's no one on this team that's leading them in the battle. You know, they have good players. You know, I don't think Dex is like, by definition,
me neither. I think they're pushing Dex into this leadership role
because he's the best. He's their best player. Yeah,
and he's been there for a long time, and it's just tough because I don't think he's. I think they've lost him too. I think they've lost
him. You heard him say it. You heard 100%.
I think Nick. I don't know if you got the clip, but
I'll drop it in. Yeah,
a couple weeks ago when I was just yelling and I was mad talking about trading Dex. Like, I'm in.
I don't think you can. Like, we just spent 30 minutes talking about guys that they just get rid of. Like, you can't.
Like Saquon, they didn't get anything for. Xavier McKinney, they didn't get anything for. Daniel Jones.
Don't worry, Ethan. They're going to get a haul for first overall in a few months.
You're God willing.
I mean, do you think that this team is like. They. Do you see a win on the schedule?
No, I said that.
They will accidentally win one game. I think I'm with you too.
Yeah, I think
they will win one by accident.
They win one 13-7 game.
Their best shot is Thursday.
You think so? They could beat Indy. I think
that's the one I had too. The Colts at home.
I think the Colts are more like, or and the Eagles, if the Eagles are locked up and they have nothing to play for, I could see them beating up on.
I think
Kenny
you guys
Pickett.
Are very much oh, like
Ethan. The thing is. Every year, there are week 16 and 17 games that make no sense. Do you remember the Carson Wentz game where he was?
Listen,
the
I understand.
And they
I understand.
Touchdown lead against the Jaguars.
I understand.
Any self-immolated.
Any given Sunday, divisional games are weird. This
one
Giants
game.
Team is
it's
no,
one.
No, this Giants
one
team
they'll
is
win
so
one
pathetic.
They'll win one 13-7 game.
Nick, timestamp this. Write on a post-it note. Put it on your wall. You idiots think that they have another win in them. They do not. This is a team of losers. They have given up. They do not care. They have no one to play for. They're not even playing for themselves.
They'll get the interim coach bump for one game. They
you
will
know what?
Win
fine.
One game.
Fine. Put an asterisk next to that. If Kafka gets the head coach, the interim head coaching label, they probably find a win. Other than that, these guys are done. They're toast. They don't give a shit.
The fact that you guys are banking on this owner just doesn't.
He doesn't fire guys in season unless it's a disgrace, which it took Eli like getting his feelings hurt for him to fire McAdoo in season. I understand that. I don't think
like, I mean, it could get worse, right?
It could. It absolutely could get worse. Right? I mean, they're going to sell what 30,000 tickets for some of these home games. And
forget about the tickets, the locker room stuff.
Yeah.
But even then, Pat Shurmur lost the locker room. And like I said, he stuck around the entire season. You know, it's
You know what this is like? This is like if in boxing, the guy got knocked out in the third round and they kept ringing the bell to keep starting the next round with the dead guy on the ground. And yeah. The guy just kept getting pummeled for another 9 rounds. That's what this is. The Giants got knocked out.
More
in the sixth
more
round.
Akin to UFC, and Herb Dean is just like 15 minutes late yeah. to jumping on the unconscious right. body.
Exactly. Yes.
It's
like
not
the guy's like eyes like hanging out of his socket. And he's like, oh, he's good to go.
Yeah. All right, like, let the doctor look at him. Let the doctor look at him. Let the doctor make the decision. He might be ready to go.
Malik Nabers comments. You guys,
he's right.
Yeah, he's right, dude. Listen, dude, he's right. Just like Odell was right. Okay,
and people, you might not like the way he says it, right? But
you don't want people don't want to hear the truth, but the truth is the truth.
You need the bad guy.
Yeah, who's the bad guy? You need people like me.
Dayball,
Nick, we're on fire with the movie references last few weeks.
Thank you.
You know, Dayball's tried to like create this environment where he has like a friendship with players, especially, you know, a guy like Malik Nabers, but it doesn't seem like the feeling is mutual. This is the second
that's time his boss, he's, brother. They're now friends.
This is the second time he's thrown the coach under the bus. The second time he said, ask Dave. I think he did it a couple weeks ago. So
he's not even 1 year in. Buckle up, buddy. This is life as a Giant. I don't know what else to tell you, you know. And the sad part is I could see him being dumb enough to start, you know, internally campaigning for Cam Ward or Shedeur Sanders.
I thought you were going to say start cryptically posting on social media about like God knows what.
Oh, well, listen, he's a wide receiver. That's in his blood. That's in his DNA.
Every time a team that's, you know, also drafting for a quarterback wins a game, he says, thank you, God. Helps think about.
Dude, honestly, I did have like a tweet drafted up today where I was thinking about like, I'm just going to start randomly tweeting, thank you, God. Just, and not even like after Giants losses, just like on a Wednesday at 4 o'clock or like I think Friday at 4 a.m. I'm just going to start tweeting, thank you, God.
So during the entire 4 o'clock window, I was doing nothing but mock drafts.
Watching Shedeur Sanders mock drafts.
No, I just did mock drafts. Like, just kept doing these scenarios in my head of
Travis Hunter and Matt Stafford. That's the plan.
Thank you.
Travis Hunter and Matthew Stafford.
Matthew Stafford's not coming to the Giants.
Bro, okay, but what about Aaron Rodgers?
No, absolutely not. Because he's going to want his own bullshit. That's the reason you can't invite him, because he's going to want.
You say like, no. Then you tell him.
Yeah, then you say no. Bro, listen.
Then he's not going to come.
Do you want to go through the problem of moving? Or just like come here?
I don't want Aaron Rodgers on this team. He doesn't care about winning. He doesn't care about playing good football.
Neither does Joe Shane. Like, maybe they're a match made in heaven. I don't know what to tell you, Nick. Like, I'm fine. Like, you want to give it a shot, I'm in.
I don't think Rodgers is getting signed. I don't think there's a team that would take him right now.
Dude, if they bring in Rodgers, I will drink unpasteurized milk. Just one glass. I'll drink unpasteurized
milk. Make sure you go to the farm. You don't like get it from like the tractor supply store.
Oh, I'm just gonna just right out of the udder.
Yeah, exactly. Make sure you do that instead. Don't get the one that says not for human consumption at the pet store.
My heater is not working in my house. So I have two units. One is like upstairs, one is the main level.
Yeah.
And my heater stopped working, and like the thermostat said like 65 degrees, which is pretty cold, right? But for some reason, like as I was watching the game, I just kept sweating. Right,
65 is not cold, and you're making fun of me for being cold at the game today. That's unbelievable.
Well, 65 inside is different from 65 outside.
Exactly, you know. Nick. Thank you, Nick. But like, I just started sweating. Like, I was like, why am I sweating? Like, I didn't care, but I turned the game off. I just kept like thinking about like, oh, we here again? I was just here. We just did this like 2 years ago. Like, am I really doing this again?
Is this worse? This is worse because they spent more on the roster and there's talent.
Forget the roster. This is worse.
Because it's six games left.
And no, because the owner. Like, with the Joe Judge thing, at least it was like, yeah, he's going to go out of his, like, it's going to be a new thing. Like, he's never gone out of his comfort zone. Like, now he's doing it again. Like, we might be doing that again. Or even worse, he might make that same mistake again, where he fires one guy but keeps the other guy.
Yeah,
and then puts one guy on the hot seat. And then, you know, it's that's why I'm like, when you like, everyone is like, oh, we got a clean house. It's like, oh yeah, that's fine. That's the easy part of this. right? Like the easy part is like, yeah, this is not.
There are good coaches out there. I'll tell you right now.
This is going to be a good offseason. Need a coach.
Hey Nick, when they were hiring a coach the last time, they hired coaches in
that cycle.
Yeah, they hired arguably the best one, by the way, of the coordinators that were.
Who was in the Dable cycle?
That was O'Connell. O'Connell's the best coach from that cycle.
I don't know. Everybody was on the Dable train back then.
No. I think he's just saying in present day.
In general.
I'm talking about go back to 2022.
No, Dable was the big one because Bills went to the AFC title game. Allen was.
He's just saying O'Connell is objectively better.
Yeah. Mike McDaniel. Mike McDaniel, Kevin O'Connell.
I think both guys over Dable right now.
Doug Peterson was there. Todd Bowles. Josh McDaniels, Matt Eberflus, Dennis Allen, Lovie Smith, Nathaniel Hackett.
Some real rough names there.
But out of those, if you go back to it, like,
a lot of those guys didn't get head coaching jobs.
Dayball 2022 was the guy. Joe Shane was a
big... Who's this year? Well, first of all, here's one question. Who from college? It's like, anyone from college that's going to be...
I could see Lincoln Riley. I think some team would be stupid. I think there would be an NFL team that would try that. I think the Cowboys, in all honesty. I could see Chicago for Caleb. I could see Dallas. I could see Jerry.
I feel like Lincoln Riley's been rumored to the Cowboys for like a decade.
And now that he has an easy out to get rid of Mike McCarthy because it's an expiring contract, I think that's absolutely on the table. You know,
I don't think Lincoln Riley's going to the NFL. I think he'll get another college job somewhere.
I don't think he wants to coach in college anymore because he thought he was going to have an easy ride at USC.
Recruiting.
Yeah, stuff. I thought he was going to have an easy path to the Pac-12 title game and a walk to the playoff every year. And I think USC is what, 7-3, 7-4? They're terrible. I think there's a real chance he could go to the NFL. Yeah. I think Matt Campbell has always been rumored to the NFL. I think Ryan Day.
He's been rumored since Tom Coughlin got fired in 2015.
Yeah. I think Ryan Day is on the table for the NFL. I think
you got Ben Johnson.
Yeah. I think he's going to be
the number one.
I think what's their DC? Aaron Glenn is their defensive. I think he's absolutely on the table. Vrabel, I think.
Vrabel, 100%. Belichick.
I'll give you a college name that could potentially make the jump. Marcus Freeman, Notre Dame head coach.
I don't think Notre Dame's that good.
Yeah.
But like, I see what you're saying. NFL, I think I see the idea. Like, it's the Gerard Mayo blueprint, the young guy who's not that far removed from coaching, able to relate with young players. I understand, like, from a narrative perspective. I don't think he's a strategy coach. I think you would need to have,
motivator.
I think he's more of that. I think you would need really good coordinators. I think you would need to have almost like, you would need to have the equivalent of what the Eagles have. You would need to have your interim coach on staff where, like, you have Fangio and Kellen Moore, where if this year went off the rails and Sirianni needed to be fired in season, you have Fangio on staff to do it. I think Vance Joseph in Denver is probably on the table as a head coaching candidate again. He's done his penance.
Can I ask you guys one question in all this?
Shoot.
Let's say the owner does the right thing. Like, let's say this thing explodes.
What is the right thing?
I'm saying, like, let's say this thing explodes, right? And he stopped, like, he's like, I just can't do it anymore. And he fires both of them, right?
Mm-hmm.
Do you actually have faith in him?
No. He's not a football person. As much as he wants to portray himself as a football person, he's fundamentally not a football person. And it's why it has these issues when they've had these sensitive inflection points in the decision making.
Yeah.
That's the thing. He's not a football person as much as he thinks he is.
So then my question is, how can I get excited for...
Because anything is better than this. That's why.
I genuinely think, like...
Nick,
if you put me in a room...
Everyone says that, but it gets worse.
I think if you put me in a room with John Mara, I could successfully Ponzi scheme him.
You think so?
100%.
You get Hollywood Steve Tisch in there and you're running a production company.
The guy is so dumb.
Oh, John Mayer is a sentimental old man.
Dude, it'll be the easiest scheme ever.
Daniel Jones did it.
Yeah, exactly.
Daniel Jones didn't need a ski mask or a gun. He just asked.
Oh my god, bro!
Politely.
You get me in a room with that sweet old man who's desperate for answers. Oh, buddy, I'm taking him to the fucking woodshed.
But time out, Nick. You said that anything is better than this. But every time people say that, it gets worse.
Not.
Like, It gets worse.
We got to play. We traded a schmuck. We won a playoff game. I mean, it wasn't always worse, you know.
Two years later, we're firing the guy.
I hate to do equivocating. I hate to do moral victory bullshit. But like at a certain point, it's either I need to stop caring about this team or I need these temporary sugar highs. You know, that's what these are at this point. You know, trading for Brian Burns, Neighbors. These are sugar highs. These are fun for a few weeks, but like not meaningfully making the team better. It might be eventually, but we're not making any real progress here. You know,
can I tell you what I'm rooting for? Like what? Like I'm rooting for Luck. Luck me
Andrew
into
Luck. We could get out of retirement. I could, you could like, talk me into Andrew Luck off the street.
Luck me into finding a quarterback that just masks everything. Luck
There's
me into
three of those guys in the entire world, though.
Like I said, like, why can't it be us? Why can't we be one of the three?
Because we had one for 15 years and we have to pay our penance for another, you know,
here's
10
the thing,
to
15 Nick,
years.
When I go buy a lottery ticket, I don't think to myself that I'm not going to win. I think to myself what I'm going to do with the, with money that I win. Okay. So like, yeah, that's where I am, guy. Like I'm dead on. Like you guys asked me to do a spaces earlier. I was so out of it. Like I just didn't care. Like what the hell? Why would I do this? Why would I?
Because I was in the car for 2 fucking hours and I wanted to yell.
No, I get that. You could have called me. Now you got a little to listen to. But like, what am I supposed to say? What am I like? We got to fire these guys. Okay. I just did that. We just did that.
It's 808-808-1019 for WFAN. Ask for Mike, Ethan. Next time you're feeling angry. And
I thought you were giving me I thought you were giving Weiss the winning lottery numbers.
At this point, the Giants having a functional football team would kind of feel like winning the lottery. 2 years ago was insane. That was great.
Think about how low the bar was. All Brian Daboll has to do to save his job is to have a functional offense in the last 6 weeks of the season, and he can't even
And
do
look
that.
At some of the teams in the NFL that are able to have functional offenses with garbage.
San Francisco, Brandon Allen had a broken finger, and he still put 20 up. With no
Ayuk, with limited McCaffrey, Kittle,
no Trent Williams,
good, obviously no Trent no Williams. They couldn't really run the ball that well.
I hope the 49ers fire Shanahan.
That's the dream,
I would get my pilot's license. I'd fly to California myself and pick him up.
The other thing I was thinking about in the vein of Shanahan, and I don't think they're going to do it. I think they're going to just let Vrabel take a job. I could see Cleveland firing Stefanski and promoting Vrabel. I'd take Stefanski.
I don't think so. They said he's safe.
You would think, but that owner is also an idiot. So
yeah, well, I think they're going to win some more games with Jameis down the stretch.
That's true. Jameis is competitive. The Panthers look decent today.
Yeah, that was pretty sick.
Yeah, Canales kind of. I mean, he got a great year out of Baker last year. Bryce Young looks not great, but you know he looks like an NFL quarterback. I mean, at this point, all we can do is hope for to get lucky. All right, here's a question for you. Would you rather get lucky on the coach or the quarterback?
Quarterback, 100%.
Yeah, I think so too, but...
Coach.
You guys don't understand how great, when you have a great quarterback, how it just masks...
What do you mean? We don't understand.
Well, you guys
have... You answer the question by saying coach.
Correct. Dude, look at Shanahan.
Let's
look at Kyle Shanahan. Has he won a Super Bowl? No.
No, but he's competitive every year. And he's done it with fucking bozos.
Great quarterbacks. Great quarterbacks.
No, you give him an average quarterback, he's getting you to the championship.
Well, here's the thing. I want to get lucky with a quarterback because if there's not a lot of great coaches in the NFL, right? But there's a lot less great quarterbacks than great coaches.
I would say there's more coaches than quarterbacks.
Exactly.
I would say
a lot of coaches are average. A lot of coaches are average in the NFL, but they still win. Nick Sirianni is one of the worst people. Like I wouldn't let him lead a tour for me. Like he wouldn't be my like tour guide, but you know,
even through the Capitol.
Yeah. Which, by the way, I with Saquon, one of the things that Saquon does for Nick Sirianni is that he saves Nick Sirianni from doing something dumb.
Yes.
They lean on the run and exactly. It works.
Just when Nick Sirianni is like thinking in his mind that, let me do something that is different, right? They hand the ball off to Barkley and Barkley gets like 12 yards. It's like,
when the Eagles have been at their best the last 3 years, it's been when they've ran the ball very well. When they went to the Super Bowl 3 years ago, two years ago, they had the best rushing offense in the league, and Hurts didn't have to do a lot. And
I still think Detroit would smoke them.
Oh yeah, Detroit's a much 100%. Better running team, and their defense is better.
They would outcoach them, and I think they have the talent to meet them. I think they would.
Talent-wise, it's close, but Detroit's a better team. I feel pretty confident in saying Detroit's a better team, even without Hutchinson. With Hutchinson, they're definitely a better team. Lions are a good football team. I think they're definitely the best team in the league. We'll see. Tonight, Ravens, Chargers, that's a good measuring stick.
I think the Lions are about to get purged. Their front office, their coaching staff.
Oh, dude, 100%.
They're going to get looted, yeah. Yeah. They're going to get looted.
Like the guy Ray Agnew, who's like a former NFL player.
Yeah.
Everyone's like, he's like the hot commodity for teams. I think they're trying to pin him and Ben Johnson together, but it might be him and Aaron Glenn, maybe with the Jets.
Yeah. Would you rather be the Jets or the Giants right now? Because I think they're both fucked, but...
Giants. The Jets, look at how awful the Giants are, but the Jets still managed to out-awful them. The Giants.
Yeah. All right. I'm exhausted. Let's wrap up.
We're not wrapping up.
Oh, ring. Oh, is that Dan Duggan of The Athletic? Let's cut to Dan.
We now welcome in our guest. He is Dan Duggan, who covers the Giants for The Athletic. He is, in my opinion and Nick's opinion, the best on the beat. Love his stuff. He's the reason I subscribe to The Athletic. And I'm not just saying that because he came on, but Dan, what's up?
I appreciate that. It's a very warm introduction. And yeah, it's good to talk. It's been a while. I mean, I think we kind of like interact on Twitter, but it's been a while. Yeah.
Why I'm being honest about the whole Athletic thing is because I think the last time we had you on, you were with NJ.com, right?
Wow. Has it been that long?
Yeah, it's been a while. But anyways, Dan, how are you? I know it's a busy time.
Yeah, I mean, I'm good. Just kind of still sorting through the wreckage of Sunday's game and preparing to maybe... have even a more calamitous day on Thanksgiving. I mean, that really feels like it's setting up for, let's just say it could be a big day. If that goes much like Sunday did, I think I might be busy next weekend. It's at that point, in my opinion.
Yeah. Let's just start right off the bat, right? So you were in the locker room. You've been in the locker room. Just looking at it from the outside in, everything that happened last week, the effort on Sunday, some of the post-game locker room stuff, the comments. My biggest takeaway from all of that is that Brian Daboll has lost the locker room. And I just came out and said, I was like, he's lost the locker room. Like I've seen this movie before a couple of times. Am I right to come to that conclusion, or are we not there yet?
Yeah. I mean, you know, there's not like some like buzzer that anyone hits. I mean, it's certainly a feeling thing. I don't know how you could come to really any other conclusion. Cause even, you know, as you alluded to, you know, I've been on the beat since 2016. So I've seen some bad seasons. I've seen some locker rooms go off the rails. This was as overt as it's been. A lot of times you get those stories, or you find that out through anonymous sourcing. You're working guys in the corners and you got to, you know, get them outside the facility. This is post game when there's a scrum around these players and the PR staff and the Giants in-house media and cameras are all set up, and you got rookies, you know, basically calling out the coach. You got Jermaine Illuminor calling out his teammates. You got Dexter Lawrence calling everybody soft. I mean, I haven't seen it to that degree again, like that publicly and that overtly. Usually it's, you know, you can know when it's coming. There's comments you pick up on, but it's not usually just like said right to the camera after a game. So to me, I don't know how any other conclusion you could come to. Now, maybe they come in on Thanksgiving and, you know, they do to Dallas what Tampa did to them yesterday and say, oh, all right, it was a blip. Dable got this shit back under control. I don't expect that to happen. So once you've already had, you know, the big moment of post-game Sunday or in the game itself, if you can't get that righted quickly, it's only going to get worse, obviously. I mean, you got six games left. I think we're all expecting this to snowball. And it's the thing with Dable is it's really hard to come back from this. I don't think you can. Like if he has lost the locker room, it's over. So I think it's just, you know, that's what these next couple of days and weeks are going to be determining. Did he in fact lose it? Because it certainly feels that way right now.
When we had talked yesterday, Weiss and I were talking yesterday, we were trying to deduce what kind of was the inflection point. Do you think it was the handling of Jones? Was it going to DeVito as opposed to Locke? Or do you think it's just kind of the pain of the season accumulating over the course of the year?
I mean, listen, obviously the accumulation of losing, big problem. But I do think last week was I'd say last week as a whole was the inflection point, the way it was handled kind of from top to bottom. Now, there's probably not a good way to handle it. You know, it's like once you make that move, there's going to be some different types of feelings. And that's where it comes down to the coach to manage them. He said all the right things during the week. The players, not so much, but he thought, okay, we'll see what happens on Sunday. And when they come out and it's just an absolute bloodbath, you'd say, well, obviously something went astray. So yeah, I look at it like with the Jones thing, players don't want to hear about injury guarantees and what it might cost the team next year. Half these guys won't be here. They don't like that. That means nothing to them. So we all can sit there and look at it and say, I mean, that's an obvious no brainer. You got to bench this guy, $23 million injury guarantee. Again, it's just an obvious decision. And the performance isn't good. 2-8, last thing is scoring. But still, the players are there every day in practice. They know that Daniel Jones is a better quarterback than Tommy DeVito. I don't think you'll find anybody who will claim otherwise. And players on the record have, you know, Dexter Lawrence, you know, kind of comes to mind saying he still believes Jones is the number one quarterback. So even if it's a logical business decision and you can make football rationalizations, which, you know, we all have, like I've been calling for Daniel Jones to get benched. The problem is they didn't have a better alternative. And so now you're going to bench a quarterback who has not played well, but he's better than Tommy DeVito. And then even you add in the fact they jumped Drew Lock. I don't think Drew Lock has this groundswell of support in the locker room. Like Tyrod Taylor would have, like if they went from Daniel Jones to Tyrod Taylor, I don't think there really would have been a big disruption in the locker room. But even if you went to Lock, at least players will say like, you're kind of following the natural progression of things. He's been the number two quarterback. He's been in the league. He's the guy you paid. So I think going to DeVito was kind of an alienating move. And then with the Jones thing, it was just awkward last week. Like, again, maybe there wasn't a better way to handle it. I would say maybe on Monday when you have that meeting, you tell him he's benched. That's probably the time. Maybe you want to clear his head, but maybe that's the time to have the discussion. Like, what do you want to do? Do you want us to do the Derek Carr? We'll send you home. Do you want us to grant you your release? And again, maybe they had that conversation. I don't get the sense that they did. And maybe he would have said, listen, I don't know. I got to, the word he used was process it. But to let it drag out all week and you have the charade of him being like the fourth quarterback in drills. And then, I mean, there's the whole scout team safety thing, which of course got overblown. Anyone who was there reported accurately. He lined up there in an install period and gets the aggregators take it. And it's like, he was, you know, laying guys out in practice playing safety. But still like that, it was just messy. You have the Stephen A. Smith going on with the Pat Hanlon tweeting on and on and on. It was just such a mess last week that it feels like there probably was a better way to handle it. And again, if you could have gone to him Monday and said, listen, what do you want? Do you want to go home? Do you want to get released? And he says yes, then you just do it and you rip the Band-Aid off once rather than having like day after day, like Daniel speaks on Thursday, then Friday he goes and gets the release. It just dragged on so much and it became a distraction. And again, you can't call it in the moment. I don't know how the players are going to respond. But then when you see the product on the field on Sunday, it's obvious now in hindsight. So yeah, that was a mess and clearly probably could have been handled better.
You brought up the Tyrod Taylor thing, and that was my point last night when we were recapping the game about how that sort of factors in and how they lost the locker room. I felt like they've gotten rid of so many guys that were leaders in the locker room and guys that like the veteran like Tyrod Taylor, who, you know, Tyrod wasn't a prominent player on the team. He was the backup quarterback, but like he had a lot of respect in the locker room. A lot of young players went to him for advice. And then he would like people would like the players would rally around him too. How much of that also factored into how we got to where we got to because of how they botched the quarterback situation, how they've gotten rid of so many likable, you know, if you want to call them leaders or veterans, whatever. And they haven't really, nobody else has really stepped up into that role. Like they're pushing Dex into like this face of the franchise leader. He's their best player, whatever, like Andrew Thomas, but he's like a silent guy. How much is it the fact that they've pushed out, not just the Saquon thing or the McKinney thing, but a guy like Tyrod Taylor, who's well-liked, worked hard, and then he's gone. And then when you have to bench Jones, you have nobody better or nobody that the team can rally around behind him.
Yeah, I mean, I think the Tyrod thing is more just that he could play. Like, he was, like, well-regarded, and I think there was guys last year at the time. Remember, he was injured, and he came back, and they stuck with DeVito. I think that raised some eyebrows in the locker room, and then, you know, the DeVito, he had the one good game, and then the air kind of came out of the balloon, and then went back to Tyrod. So, yeah, Tyrod was a respected guy, but I think it was more that players we could play. And if Drew Lock, if they felt like he could play, like maybe there'd be more of a an uprising. I think he just hasn't looked very good. But then your greater point, you said not so much Saquon and McKinney. I do think that's important, though, that there aren't great leaders in this locker room. There's kind of a void. It's a little telling when you hear that Greg Van Roten is the guy giving like the post game, like heading the post game players only meet, not players only, that's a cliche, but like, you know, addressing the team after the game, like Greg Van Roten, the journeyman guard who signed here a week into camp, like, that's not exactly what you're looking for. I mean, Dex is trying his best. And I think he's, you know, he's embracing the role as much as he can. Offensively, it's funny. You look at the coin toss yesterday. They don't have any offensive captains left because Andrew Thomas out for the season and he's been away from the team. And obviously Daniel Jones got cut. We made fun of him so much for having 10 captains. Maybe they just were, having some depth there because now they're down to five. And now it's Bobby Okereke, Dex and Casey Kreider. So they don't even have an offensive captain. So yeah, there's a leadership void there with guys like Saquon, guys like McKinney, guys like Leonard Williams, guys like Julian Love, who, you know, different circumstances led to the departure. Like Leonard Williams, it was a great trade, but still, good player, good leader. Like you have to replace that somehow. Like I think Brian Burns has some decent leadership traits. But still, I mean, you just kind of chip away at some of the guys who've been here for a while, and that's fine, but you haven't done a good job backfilling it with other guys who are going to come in and take that mantle. And listen, it's really hard to lead when the product is this bad too. You know what I mean? Like Dexter Lawrence can say whatever he wants and get up and, you know, stand in front of the group and say what he's going to say. When you go out and then just get your doors blown off, even his message, you know, is probably not being received the same way anymore.
Do you feel that this is a credibility thing or an execution thing as far as Dable not really getting through and going out there? Because you alluded to it, the idea that they went out there and got smoked. But do you think that's more of they're just not that good of a football team? Or do you think it's that everyone's kind of checked out because this is so dire?
Yeah, I think it's a combination. You know, I think that's why bad seasons tend to go off the rails. You can't just lose every week and have it be like quiet and no drama. Like that's just not how it works. Frustrations are going to grow. So I think that's a big problem. They just don't have very good players, and that's why they're losing. But then again, just that sustained losing it's a corrosive effect to it, where again, guys can't just say, all right, well, and I work hard. And I always say, like, I know there's a lot of talk about effort yesterday, and there's certainly some instances where maybe guys, you know, weren't busting it 100%. The thing I always feel like it shows up, it's not really on Sunday, because most of these guys are competitive and they're smart enough to know that, listen, if I just blatantly don't try on the field, I mean, maybe like Deontay Banks excluded, if I blatantly don't try on the field, that's not going to reflect well on me. I think you see that type of stuff start to take its effect on like Tuesday. You're coming into the facility, doing the extra film study, getting the extra, you know, rehab and prehab. You're doing all, you're staying at the facility as long as you did in week 4, week 5. And no, I mean, these guys are human beings. They're like, all right, man, I'm going to go in the city tonight instead of, you know, stay at the facility at 8 o'clock. So I think that happens more in these losing seasons where guys like, you know, there's the infamous example with Golden Tate had his golf clubs in the locker room in like week 9 and Shermer's last season, like this stuff like that. So it's not even so much, they're not trying as hard as Sunday. It's just that they're not as invested. And then that just, you know, when you're playing a team that is like the Bucks are, you know, fighting for the playoffs, it shows up and you get results like yesterday.
So you talked about personnel, and that's where I want to get to next, the big picture stuff, obviously. You know, it's not good. And one of the things you've harped on for, is that appropriate to use harp on?
Well, depends where you're going with this. Let's see.
All right. I've had like arguments while reading with your stuff for a while now, right? But now I just can't defend it anymore. Like you won that argument with me.
All right, then you can say I harped on it. I'm putting you over.
You know, all this talk about, you know, where, you know, it's year three and where we are, not just with the quarterback, but the players on defense. And you've basically said, like, what gives you confidence? And for a while, it's been, hey, my confidence has been, well, the reason why they were hired, you know, where they came from, the organization that they were with. But like, yeah, 3 years is not a long time, but it's still enough time where your confidence level can change. And I can always go past the Jones contract. And I know you always go after people who say, how can you look past it? But to me, where everything gets lost is what happened this offseason, right? Where, like, Dan, one rule I have, and you're in locker rooms, but like one thing I always, this is like something that I religiously believe when it comes to the NFL. When you try to replace your quarterback, whether that's trading up in the draft or, you know, free agency, whatever, like that's it. Like you can't go back. And the statistics show that. Like you look at all the teams that have flirted with the idea of moving up or doing that kind of thing. They never go back. It never ends well. But the Giants and the way they operated was like, we're going to try to do that and we want to do that. We're going to film it for HBO, but then, hey, he's still our guy and we're going to draft him Malik Nabers. I think that's where this all falls apart. And that's where they sort of lose me, where I'm like, yeah, I sort of agree with the people on the other side. Going forward, do you think this is a, like, I know you've sort of hinted at it, but like, is that realistically a chance now? Like, could this
owner really like clean house again 3 years later when right people, I'll let you answer that, but they just spent like almost 2 years changing up how they operate as a franchise, you know, like,
yeah,
are we really doing that again? Not that I'm against it. I'm just like, wow, that's how bad it's gotten.
Well, I mean, the way you just kind of had that hesitation in your voice, I think that they don't want to. Like, John Mara has made that abundantly clear. Like, he gave the vote of confidence, obviously. The word I have always focused in on that statement, though, was he doesn't anticipate making a change in the offseason. That left him some wiggle room. You can't call him a liar if he makes a change after the season because he didn't anticipate going, let's say, 2-15 and having, you know, drama every week. So I don't think they want to. I just don't think, and this is the argument I've made a lot of, you could say I've harped on it. I don't think
continuity. I'm sorry, but I shouldn't have used that word.
I'm joking. I don't think continuity for continuity's sake makes any sense when the product is poor. Like, if you're on the fence, even you could maybe make that argument, but it's going in the wrong direction. Like, you talk about like confidence in this regime. We're in year three and they're regressing. Forget about, you know, progressing and building towards something. This looks worse now than at any point in their tenure. And I think it's only going to get worse. So if we get to the end of the season and they don't have some magical little, you know, Tommy DeVito 3-game winning streak to ease some of these concerns. And I know fans will say, oh, whatever, they should tank. They just can't, because how could you feel confident in this regime and Dable if they go 2-15 and are getting blown out weekly? You say, oh, hey, who's got the number one pick? Okay, you have any confidence that the regime that just presided over a team that went from 9 wins to 6 wins to 2 or 3 wins is the ones that are going to turn this thing around? So yeah, that's where I just think that they might make the decision for Mara. If it becomes just a complete disaster, you could argue it's our priority there, but it's like, there's still so much time left in the season. It's like a third of the season still to go. And it seems completely hopeless. You know, again, like, how many games are going to win with Tommy DeVito at quarterback? Now you got Jermaine Illuminora. Who knows if he plays on Thursday? You're going to have Chris Hubbard and Evan Neal going against Micah Parsons on national TV. Like, it just feels like there's so many things here that could really unravel. So to answer your question, I don't think John Mara wants to make another change, but I just would hope if he doesn't, he can come up with a more compelling reason than like, oh, we just made a change a couple of years ago. I don't want to keep doing that. Like, that to me is just not a good way to operate. Like, the fact that you fired Joe Judge after 2 years or Dave Gettleman after 4 years shouldn't necessarily give their successors a longer leash. Like, that just logically, it doesn't even really make sense to me. You're judging them on what they've done, not what you've screwed up in the past.
The one thing you've tweeted a lot about, Dan, is the idea that it doesn't necessarily matter that Barkley's gone on to have the great year he's had with Philly, that it's more so how the Giants feel about how John Mara feels about it. And the question I have off of that is, how do you read into stuff like that behind the scenes? Obviously, John Mara is not very forthcoming. He's not available all the time. How do you try and get a temperature on stuff like this? Whereas the rest of us are kind of in the dark and we have to watch the games and glean and guess. What are you using kind of as your bellwether? Is it competitiveness? Is it staying in these games? What are you looking at as far as that decision?
Oh, so I thought you were going to ask about like how I know how I feel about Saquon. I was going to say, you're giving me way too much credit because we all got to see it as what I alluded to on Hard Knocks. I mean, listen, I thought that's how John Mara felt. And so most off seasons, I would have to go with my gut or maybe you talk to people. And again, it wasn't shocking to find out that John Mara had strong feelings about Saquon, but we literally got to see it. We got to see the words come out of his mouth. We got to see the anguish as everything unfolded. So to that point, obviously, there's no mystery there. There's no great beat reporting to find out that. So then you just extrapolate it. And this is the point I've been making a lot. It's like, I agree with letting Saquon Barkley walk. And so people are making these arguments. I'm like, no, you're missing the point. It's not me and you debating it. The guy who's going to decide Joe Shane's fate didn't agree. So like, we can all agree that it was a good move. It hasn't worked out great. The guy who is going to decide if Joe Shane is back or not adamantly wanted to keep Saquon Barkley. He deferred. He deferred, let Joe Shane get his way. And now the result is, you have the 32nd ranked offense and the worst record in the league. And this other guy is having like an all-time MVP caliber season. So even if you can sit here and say, you know, March 15th, whenever that decision was rendered, I understand the logic. It's still the real world. Like, the results still do matter. And so if your boss didn't like your decision, then you went out and lost the company $50 million. Like, you're still responsible for that. Even if he was like, hey, I'm gonna let you make this call. And it's funny because John Mara, he spoke during camp and hit a line. I have to look it up specifically for something I'm probably gonna write tomorrow, but I asked, like, does it raise the stakes for Joe Shane when he makes the decision that goes against what you want? And he gave, you know, some political answer of like, hey, you know, you got to let these guys make the decisions. They're in those roles. And he goes, and then, you know, and if it doesn't work out, we bitch about it later. And it was kind of a throwaway line. I imagine there's a lot of bitching about it later going on. Like, can you imagine Joe Shane having to walk into that office this morning? Like, he must tiptoe by John Mara's office and like close his door gently so John doesn't even know he's in the building, because that has to be so uncomfortable. It's bad enough, you know, you're riding home after your team lost 30-7. The wheels are coming off. You're listening to these post-game quotes coming out. And then you turn on the TV and you see Saquon Barkley, you know, what, 300 yards from scrimmage. Like, just, it's just, it just compounds things so much to me. And again, we can all agree, yeah, running backs don't matter, blah, blah, blah. The guy who signs the checks does care, did want this guy. So there's no way we can minimize what Saquon is doing, and especially in comparison to what the Giants aren't. Again, last in the league in scoring.
Yeah, you talked about turning on the TV after I was telling him the story last night. My heater wasn't working in my house last night, and it got pretty cold. And I, you know, you watch the Giants game and you're pissed about that, and then you turn on the television at Sunday Night Football and Saquon Barkley breaks for 70 yards, and I started hallucinating. And I was one of those people that like let him walk. So yeah, that I can't imagine how the owner's feeling, especially given the fact that he went, you know, to Philadelphia. But we talked about offensively, defensively, and I think
this is where so much of the blame is on Joe Shane and his personnel, because like we know the offense 30, like we talk about the offense a lot, who they let go and their quarterback, but like, I don't know how anybody can look at the draft picks that they brought in, the investments that they made, and they've made a lot of investments on defense. Like, can you tell me where the great player is, the money they've spent, the draft picks they used? I mean, the secondary, what is it, one interception, Nick, since week one? That right there, how, like, I understand people are going on the quarterback and Joe Shane stuff, but don't you think that people are looking past the defensive part of the thing and how the investment he made, the Brian Burns trade, the fact that they can't stop the run, where Shane Bowen was a guy that, you know, that was his specialty in Tennessee, right, was stopping the run. How, like, that, don't you think how much of that is going to play a role in all this when they ultimately sit down and decide their fate?
No, I mean, 100%. And that's the point I've been making, because now I see how I've been around. I see how these things start to go and the narrative start to turn. Now it's all about, well, they can't tackle. Tackling is a fun little nebulous thing to blame because it's not real on the players, not really on the coaches. It's just, oh, they got to execute better. Forget that. They don't have good players. Like, it's cut and dried. Like, they showed the stats from Tennessee. Okay, great. You didn't do anything to upgrade the actual talent to your run defense. Last year, you had A'shaun Robinson and Leonard Williams on your defensive line. Both of those guys are gone. You had Xavier McKinney at safety. He's gone. You didn't bring anybody to upgrade those positions. You look, I mean, go back. Obviously, Wink was persona non grata. He couldn't do anything. He couldn't coach. Look at his run defenses in Baltimore. They were pretty damn good. They were top five, I think, every year. He comes here. The personnel stinks, and it got worse. I mean, I'll say that. Like, Shane Bowen has less to work with than Wink. Wink at least did have some good defensive linemen in those years. The edges were pretty suspect, but that's the problem. And it's funny. I made this point. I did a live room on The Athletic earlier. Go through the defense and tell me how many really good players there are. I'll obviously give you Dexter Lawrence, and I'll give you Brian Burns. Anybody else? I mean, people got to talk about Bobby Okereke. Like, have you seen it this year? I mean, he was good last year.
There's a clip from yesterday.
Yeah, I've seen that clip.
I don't know if you saw the clip.
Like, that, that's bad.
But yeah, I mean, again, he's fine. And that's one of my favorite arguments, too. You talk about things I talk about a lot, is people say if they tagged Daniel Jones, they wouldn't have been able to make any other moves that offseason. Good. They've just threw money away on guys like Darren Waller and Paris Campbell. And then the rebuttal always is, oh, they wouldn't be able to sign Bobby Okereke. All due respect to Bobby Okereke, there's a Bobby Okereke walking down the street. You know, I mean, every NFL team has a decent middle linebacker. That is not some integral piece that they'd be lost without. I mean, they've won 8 games in the last 2 years. I don't think Bobby Okereke was this transformational piece that they couldn't live without. But so, yeah, you just go through the lineup on defense. The second defensive line spot next to Dex is, you know, just a black hole. Forget if they have to play a third guy when they rotate Dex out. Again, the middle linebackers are fine. Like, I like Mike McFadden, but like, he's just an average player. Kayvon is fine, but nothing special. The secondary, it's all either young or just bad, like, or a combination of the two. So like, there's not a lot of talent there. So I know Shane Bowen, trust me, I know where this is going. He's going to be the scapegoat. It's going to be all him. Whereas the defense, if you're being honest, has been the somewhat bright spot, and that's a stretch, but like, they've kept them in games. They have not had too many games like yesterday where they got blown out. Like, the red zone defense isn't bad. Like, the pass rush was good. But so that's just where this is going. Like, we're going to start focusing on Shane Bowen, and then we're going to start talking about things like tackling. The personnel stinks on defense, and that's why the defense isn't playing well.
It's the same thing with the offense. There's not a lot of talent on the offense either, and they've spent a lot of money on it too. We spent 20 minutes doing exactly that, going player by player. Do you think this guy is good or not? They have like four functional players in their 22 starters. No wonder they're getting ran off the field every single week.
No, absolutely. Yeah. The offense is the same exercise, because then people say, oh, like the upgrade, the offensive line. It's like, sure. I mean, like, you know, like they have serviceable NFL players. It's not like this thing is like, wow, they got a really humming up front. You know, it's like John Runyon's a nice solid player. You pay $10 million. That's kind of the going rate for a nice solid guard. Like Greg Van Roden, like, is what he is. He's a stopgap. But Luminor, I think, has been a bit of a bright spot tackle. I think he's a little overrated because people like his personality. Like he's fine.
He's not an abomination like the last.
Yeah. Like, and these are serviceable vets, and they paid kind of market rate for serviceable vets. There's not like this young infrastructure here of like, man, this line is building. It's going to be good for years and years. I mean, some of these guys are 1 or 2 year stopgaps. John Michael Schmitz hasn't really made any progress, and he's an older young, you know, he's a young player, but he's older. Like, I don't think there's going to be some massive leap from him. Andrew Thomas, obviously, is a great player. You need to keep him on the field. You look at the offense, it's like Tyron Tracy, feel great about him. Malik Nabers, feel great about him on, you know, there's some things there that, you know, I think they have to get there.
I don't feel great about Malik Nabers because I feel like we're too quick.
And I think this is because we're not used to having great players on this roster. I think people are too quick to like anoint things. Like, he's a great prospect coming out, right? But he's also dropped a lot of passes. Now, that's because they're targeting him a lot too. But like, let's just wait. Like, yeah.
Those first four games were like, whoa, right. Knock your socks off, had the concussion, come back. I mean, yeah, he still has great production because they target him a ton, even though, you know, not as much as he wanted in the first half, obviously, but at the end of the game, he's around 10 targets every game. He's a good player. He's going to get 6 catches for 70 yards, kind of like rolling out of bed. But yeah, he has not been what we, you know, you saw a glimpse of that in the first four games, like, oh my goodness, like this is the next Odell. I don't think he's quite on that trajectory anymore. Now, that's not to say he's doomed, that he could get right back on it. The quarterback play has not been great. Obviously, the whole surrounding factors, but also they got to rein some things in there, because like,
yes,
we love the passion, all this stuff, but man, as a rookie to basically be calling out the coach, what is it, 11 games in your career?
It's the second time he did that too, right? He did it once earlier in the season.
Yeah,
too.
He did do the Ask Dabes. Yeah.
Yeah. They knew this. This was, you know, they went in eyes wide open. Another one where Hard Knocks helps, because again, yeah. I had heard, you know, every year you talk to scouts and people about prospects, and I had heard all of these things about him. But obviously, you ask the team, they're going to say, oh, no, he was fine. Everything checked out. We saw in their scouting meetings, I can't believe how much Hard Knocks showed as a sidebar. but we saw the area scouts say, like, you know, there's some personality there. We got to get to know. Like, and so he, and then you saw how Dave's quizzed him every time you talked to him about, like, hey, how are you going to handle not getting the ball? How are you going to handle losing? So none of this should surprise them, but you still need a manager. You can't just say, hey, we're going to let Malik just say whatever he wants and spout off. Like, that's not going to go well for the long term. So, there's a lot for them to manage. And again, that's why I think it's going to be really hard to keep this train on the tracks for the next 6 weeks.
I'm going to ask you one more question, Dan. And this is you covering the team. You've covered a lot of head coaches, right? You covered Shermer and you covered Judge and you, this McAdoo. Is, were you here with Tom Coughlin too? Or Matt, you,
no, I came in with McAdoo. So 16 was my first year.
Okay. So you've covered all these coaches. Brian Daboll seems to be the one less interested in having any type of relationship with the media. And you don't have to answer this if you don't want to, but it seems like part of the reason why, I'm not going to say not, it's not part of the reason, but it seems like he's made no friends in the media. And whether that's the way he, and I feel like, look, you don't have to give the media everything, but like, don't treat them like they're an idiots, right? Don't tell them, well, I don't know anything about my quarterback today, right? I think that was the one big thing, right? Do you feel like that's a big detriment when you're coaching in the NFL as someone who covers, as someone who, like, I know it's about wins and losses, but sometimes it's just like, hey, have a human to human conversation with the media, and like, they'll obviously judge you on the results, but like, it's okay to kind of be yourself. There's a human element to it. It's not, you're not putting yourself at a disadvantage on Sundays by telling the media that the guy's injured on Monday and might not play. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. It seems like he does a lot of that.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's a good question. It's funny. I was talking to one of the Giants head coach, I don't know if it was Dable or Judge, it was in the last couple of years, and they I don't remember who it was. Anyways, they had a good line though, basically about their media relations approach, was like, you know, they can't help you enough if you're losing, and they can't hurt you if you're winning. And it was something, I'm paraphrasing, it was something along those lines. And I get that. Like, I understand that. Like, there's nothing I can really write right now that's going to save Brian Daboll from all the scrutiny he's getting. And if I was, you just look like you're carrying water and it'd be very transparent. I mean, I think he probably could help himself a little bit. And because I think, and this is kind of cliche that we as reporters always fall back on, but I think it's true. Like when they get up at the press conference, they're speaking to the fans. Like it might be me and Pat Leonard and Jordan and whoever, they might not even like us. But if you let that show in your answers, it reflects poorly on you because the fans don't, most fans aren't as plugged in as like you and paying close attention. They don't know who the reporters are. All they're seeing is the camera on the coach and how the coach responds, how he doesn't give anything or how he can be, you know, just like unnecessarily clipped with some of his answers. So I just don't think that benefits a coach. I don't think it's like about having like a great relationship, but it's like, obviously that's great. But I just think I think sometimes these guys lose sight of what that press conference means because you know who else is watching that and paying very close attention? The owner.
Of course. Yep.
And that's why it's so funny with that Joe Judge rant after that Chicago game in 21. He went on to talk for 9 minutes. It was for an audience of, well, I guess two. John Mara and Steve Tisch. That's who he was talking to there. Now, it was a miscalculation. It did not come across well. He should have saved that for like the next morning in the office. But that's who he was making that point for. He didn't care if I asked the question or you were listening. He was talking ownership and he was making his case. And again, it blew up in his face. But that's, I think, just coaches have to be cognizant of that. Like if you're going to go out there and project a certain image, it's not about your relationship with the media. You have to be smart enough to realize it's how the media, I mean, how the fans and the public are going to perceive you. And then also ownership cares about that type of stuff. So I think that's where he probably hasn't helped himself. Like it's not about, if he's feeding me like scoops or anything like that.
Of course not. Yeah.
More just about how you handle press conferences. I think, yeah, his approach, like, and he hasn't, you know, he comes from that Belichick tree. I don't think he's adopted a ton from that. I think he has done his own thing.
He comes off as an asshole. Like
he has some of the Belichick roots on how he's just not going to give.
I'll say it.
Yeah, you say it. And it's also a little insulting to the fan base and the public though, when you're going to say stuff like to your point, just a recent example, like he hasn't checked in and on his starting quarterback's health 3 days before the next game. Like that's obviously foolish, but he doesn't want to get into talking about injuries, whatever. But like that to me is kind of just like, who are you serving there? The injury report's going to come out in 4 hours. You can just say, yeah, no, I mean, he's you know, got a rib injury, he'll be fine, whatever. But to just always stonewall, I just don't think it benefits them. But again, I go back to that point. I think it's a fair one from their perspective. Like if they can help us all they want, if the team loses, we can't help them and vice versa, you know. The Boston media was frustrated with Belichick for 20 years and he just had the point of his rings and no one cared about them complaining about his bad press conferences.
I'll ask you one more question and then we'll wrap up, right? It's the big one. You're there. You have a vision on how the final six games are going to play out. I do too. I think the doomsday scenario is firing one and keeping the other. I think you either just ride it out and give them a year or two, whatever. I know it's tough to envision that right now. Or I think you pull the plug. I think there's no wrong answer, although I'm not going to say there's no wrong answer, but it's an opinion. But how do you think this whole thing plays out?
Yeah, well, I agree with the mindset you expressed. I don't think it can be one or the other. Like, and certainly it's not going to be, you're not going to keep Dable and fire the GM. So it would be keeping Shane and firing Dable. I don't think that would be the way to go. I think they're a package deal. I mean, Mara actually has said they aren't, but I just don't see how things are proceeding here, how you can make the determination that, yes, Joe Shane has done a good enough job to stay, but Brian Dable hasn't. Like, yeah, I think they're kind of all or nothing there. And I think you also made a point there where I don't even think it is one more year. I think you would have to commit for 2 years because, I mean, they're on the precipice here. They're going to have to draft a quarterback if they come back. If you clean house, maybe the new regime can come in and say, listen, we're picking fourth. Let's just say they squeeze a couple wins out, whatever. And, you know, we can't get up to get Shador Sanders, Cam Ward, whatever. Like, we're not going to force a quarterback here get the third quarterback in this class at pick four, something like that. I'm just making up a hypothetical. So we're going to just get a bridge quarterback and then we'll focus on, you know, getting our guy in 2026. And the new regime can withstand a 4-13 season because there'll be some patience with, hey, it's a long-term rebuild. They're not forcing things. They can get away with it. Joe Shane and Brian Dable can't. So you know they're going to force a quarterback next year, come hella high water. You'd have to believe that. And then if they do take a quarterback, what are you going to do, the whole Pat Shermer thing where the quarterback comes in, you have this QB guru, the guy shows promise, but you're still going to fire the coach after 1 year? So I really think you're committing to him for two. So that's my long preamble to say I have a hard time giving this regime two more years based on what we've seen and what I'm expecting to see for the next 6 weeks. Now, listen, if they can steady this ship enough and you know you get to the end of the line and it's like, all right, they did some good things, whatever, the locker room, everything calms down, maybe you can convince me. But the way I'm expecting this to go and how I'm expecting this to end up, I just wouldn't want to be in the position to say, all right, we're definitely forcing a quarterback in a class that, you know, I'm not sure that's the best idea. And we're coming off a 2 or 3 win season, and I'm going to commit to these guys for 2 more years. I would just have a really hard time doing that. So that's where I would lean right now. But the thing I've said all year, and it's a cop out, but it's also true, like, there's still a long time to go. We got to see how these next weeks actually play out. That's my hunch, my feeling right now. But we'll see what these next 6 weeks look like, because they may very well may make the decision for us based
that's
on
the thing. You say 6 weeks is a long time, but I also think it could be a detriment to them. Yeah, that's a tough part. Well, yeah. Nick, you got anything else?
No, that's it. Thank you so much for your time, Dan.
Yeah, appreciate it, guys.
Nick's a big fan of yours, Dan. He calls you, what do you call him, the GOAT? What
did you say? I do call you. I've been an Athletic subscriber forever. I listen to the call that what you and Charlotte do every week. I listen. That's how I decompress and go about my Monday, is listening to how bad the Giants are.
He's always sending me excerpts of your stuff, Dan, all the time.
Yeah. It's really become like a group therapy session. So I'm happy we can fill that void for people. Because it's funny, because, I mean, as you say, you're listening. Like, a lot of times it gives me ideas, or it lets me to kind of flush out some of my thoughts and helps what I write. So I like those doing those. So I'm glad you're a loyal listener.
Your argument is so good. I argue with
you. You won Weiss over, yeah.
No, I argued with him throughout the season with his articles. And then he finally duped me. He got me. I was like, I got nothing. Well, thanks, Dan. I appreciate it. You can check him out on The Athletic. Follow him, DDuggan21, right? Did I get that right?
Got it.
Thanks, Dan. Appreciate it. All
right. Thanks, guys.
Okay. Thank you for listening. Subscribe. iTunes, Audio Boom, Google Play, Stitcher Radio, Spotify. Subscribe, unsubscribe, resubscribe, rate us 5 stars, leave us a kind review. It's going to be a long 6 weeks, but we're here for you. Buckle up, and we'll talk to you next week.
Peace.